Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We begin our program today with a study from the German Cancer Research Center, and it's about vitamin A. And vitamin A deficiency is detrimental to blood stem cells. That's very important. Many specialized cells, such as in the skin, the gut, or blood, have a lifespan of only a few days. Therefore, steady replenishment of these cells is indispensable. They arise from so-called adult stem cells that divide continuously. In addition, there's a group of very special stem cells in the bone marrow. These cells remain in a kind of dormancy most of the time and only become active in an emergency, such as a bacterial or viral infection, or heavy blood loss, or in the wake of chemotherapy. And once their work is done, the blood sends its most potent stem cells back to sleep. The scientists assume that this protects them from dangerous mutations that may lead to leukemia. The mechanisms that activate these special stem cells or make them go back to sleep after they work remains elusive until now. The scientists have now identified retinoic acid, or a vitamin A metabolite, as a crucial factor in this process. If this substance is absent, active stem cells are unable to return to a dormant state and mature into specialized blood cells instead. This means that they are lost as a reservoir. This was shown in many studies, and so it's just good to know that you should be taking your vitamin A every day to keep yourself vital, and that's what this is about. And that also helps prevent cancer. So if you want to be ideally healthy, make sure you're getting your beta carotene, and that's converted into vitamin A in the body. That's your vegetables, carrot juice, celery juice, and or take a supplement, doesn't have to be high potency, that has vitamin A in it. 10,000 units is fine. Now, many of you use melatonin. It helps you sleep at night. There's a lot of other things it does, especially for those who work night shift, and you should take it as a supplement if you do. In any case, this study from the Molecular Reproduction and Genetics Clinic in Spain and a recent published paper in Molecular Reproduction, and what they found was melatonin, which your body, by the way, your brain produces from the pineal gland at night, reduces death toll due to COVID-19. So, and that's from the innate to adaptive immune response. May sound a little technical, but what it means in lay language is that we can use melatonin to prevent and treat COVID-19, according to this study. Now, melatonin is free of any harmful side effects, even at high doses, and is beneficial for many other aspects of human health, independent of COVID-19, namely the prevention of different types of cancer and their metastasis, of different complications during pregnancy, and of Alzheimer's disease. According to research, melatonin should be used even without wasting time by building and interrupting randomized controlled trials. The history of melatonin as an agent attenuating different respiratory diseases is more convincing than the data available for drugs, and that's very important. So all the good things that melatonin does, and it does a lot of good things, then, in fact, melatonin attenuates symptoms of endometriosis and adenomyosis, two important causes of infertility in young women, by modulating their immune system. It's really important to have a strong immune system, and melatonin helps you get that immune system. Now, from Stanford University comes a study about binge eating. That's so common. It's linked to habit circuitry in your brain, meaning the more you binge eat, or eating more than what your body needs, and that's most people, then your brain begins to rewire itself to accept that as normal. So habits are like shortcuts for our brain. Once we form a habit, say putting on, let's say, a seatbelt, whenever you get into a car, the behavior becomes almost automatic in the right context. But habit formation isn't always a boon. The same neural circuitry that helps us buckle up underlies binge eating's disorders. That's according to this Stanford Medicine Research study. Using brain imaging, researchers saw differences in the neurocircuitry that promotes habit formation and habit binge eating. So, the more you binge, the more your brain believes you should. And therefore, looking at a normal size portion of food, like a normal portion is a cup. So when you have a cup of beans and a cup of grains and a cup of stir-fried vegetables, maybe a cup of seaweed, that's terrific. All right? And that means that you've got just about the maximum amount the stomach can hold. And even a little less would be better. But we look at a plate and we just keep putting stuff on the plate. You've seen it. You've seen it, people in cafeterias or all-you-can-eat buffets. They just keep throwing the food on. And that creates a binge. So even when you eat the right amount of food that your body needs, you will not create satiety or feeling satisfied. So you go back for more. And then we want to feel full. And that's another habit, that your body then can no longer, with a normal amount of food, feel that it's enough. So then the body says, I need more. And then you have more. Not good. So binge eating disorders seem to have the hallmark of habits. But it wasn't known, however, whether these disorders stem from the neural circuitry of habits. And to find out, they did MRI scans on a group of individuals, and sure enough, that's what they found. So what do we do? Because we now have, get this, here are the latest statistics, 93% of the entire American public actively and consciously, it's not unconscious, it's conscious choices that are unhealthy every day. That's every day. Now, the good news is that leaves 7% of you and myself, that's about 20, more or less 25 million people, who are making active healthy choices every day. We're choosing to exercise to reduce our stress, to clean up our environment, to not take unnecessary risks that are foolish or dangerous, not to overeat or eat junk food. Those are choices we're making, and that's all good. So, what do we do to help those individuals who just can't help themselves, especially now that they've tied anxiety, I don't feel good. Okay, what am I going to do? I'm going to eat some comfort food. It'll make me feel better. And indeed it will. You're going to get positive dopamine hits, just like a person using heroin or cocaine or morphine or opium. Yeah, they'll all make you feel better or more inspired or wake you up like cocaine does or Ritalin. But they're terribly destructive for you at the same time. So we shouldn't confuse something. I can't get up in the morning, you say. Okay, well, let's have a double latte before I leave. That'll wake me up. Yeah, that's 400 to 500 milligrams of caffeine, depending upon how you make it. And that's deadly. That means that the normal production of ATP, adenosine triphosphate, the normal production of adrenaline, the normal production of an even and level blood glucose level is not going to happen. That's not good. So we got to break our habits. And what do? We go through a detoxification process. How do we do that safely? And well, ideally, do it in a group, a health support group. If you don't have one, create one. Get together with people, especially now you can do it over the internet with Zooms, and then look for qualified information, real good information of how you cleanse and break free. You start by looking at, okay, let's look up in the text, what causes energy? All right, and then you find out what causes energy. Well, ginkgo biloba is good and ginseng is good, and you start seeing that amino acids are good, so why not start putting more of those into the diet? And why not force yourself to exercise a little in the morning? And coenzyme Q10 and L-carnitine, vitamin E and tocotrienols, they also make you feel good and energize you. All right. And then why don't we have an herbal tea like green tea and start with a decaffeinated green tea? So we're having a green tea that gives us energy and calms us at the same time because it has an amino acid theanine. So a cup of green tea is taking the place of a cup of espresso. And then a cup of organic green bean coffee with less caffeine, and over a period of 2 to 3 weeks, you start having less coffee until one day you make the switch. No more coffee today, and I've got my green tea. Then you do the same thing with colas or energy drinks, which are extremely dangerous. And you start giving those up, and you have a natural, there are hundreds of brands in the health food stores, a natural cola to replace the artificial cola that you're taking. And now, and don't use carbonated water. That's not really good for your digestive system. Again, it's not done all at once. You can do it gradually. And all this time, you're taking in green juices, celery, cucumber, green apple, lemon, and I would also use, oh, arugula would be really good. Watercress would be good. Now you're taking a 16-ounce glass in the morning, and that does a great job of helping to rebalance your system. And then finally, acupuncture. Acupuncture liberates the qi. It can stimulate the qi. It's phenomenal for you. It's harmless, and it has a long ancient history of working. So that gives you energy and gets you off all the things that are causing people to binge, all right? And then discipline, just discipline. If you're going to binge, you just say, Gary, I gotta binge on something. How about having a sprout salad and binge on it? You know, have all kinds of sprouts and all kinds of lettuces in there. Make your own sauce and then salad dressing. And then eat as much as you can. All right, you're not going to gain weight. It's not going to adversely affect your brain. For decades, a lot of people in our society, tens of millions, have been taking an aspirin a day. I've been opposed to this. I've written articles on it. I've done broadcasts. I've brought cardiologists on to talk about this. And in my own clinical experience, I've seen the danger when people are on these aspirins. And just recently, in the last year and a half, they took us from a full aspirin to a half aspirin. Why? Tens of thousands of people dying each year in the United States from bleeding caused by the aspirin. But an aspirin does something else. It will thin the blood, but it does not lower your C-reactive protein, homocysteine, fibrinogen, and LDL cholesterol levels or total cholesterol levels. And that's what you have to lower. It will thin the blood, but so too will any green vegetable juice and omega-3 fatty acids and vitamin E and vitamin C and a dozen other nutrients will thin the blood. Why do you think before you go into surgery, they always say, do not take any vitamin C, omega-3 fatty acids, no green juices. Why? Because it thins the blood. And after surgery, they want you to clot. And if you don't clot, you've got a problem. So, on the one hand, they acknowledge that all these natural lifestyle choices thin your blood, but then when you ask your cardiologist, you know, if I've got high blood pressure, can I take vitamins? No, it won't do anything. I just had this conversation. I was an advocate for someone, and I went to see the doctor, and I said, this person can thin their blood and get off all these medications. And the person said, well, there's no benefit to any of that stuff. There's no science. The next day, I took the person 121 studies just on the dangers of thinning the blood with the medications he was recommending for this person. And I showed over 200 studies on what will naturally prevent stroke and heart attack, all of which he was unaware of. And I said, sir, I just gave you over 200 studies. I have over 20,000 more from Library of Medicine I can give you if you want to know more about the heart. And this was for a specialist in the heart. He didn't like that conversation. But that's fine. I don't care what they like. I care what the science, real independent science shows. So now you're taking these aspirins, but an aspirin also does more than cause bleeding. It destroys folic acid, folate, oh yeah, and vitamin B12 and vitamin B6 and vitamin C. What happens when you destroy those four nutrients? Immediately, your homocysteine level rises. I mean, really rises. Instead of being around 2 or 3 or 4, which is normal, it could go up to 14, 15. And I've seen someone recently with over 44. And of course, they were not taking any B complex or vitamin C. So when you realize that we really only have one medical system and we should have integrated with a more holistic approach, that's why they cut back to baby aspirin. and they shouldn't be using them at all. There's so many other things you could do. Don't take my word for it. Go up and look at natural ways of lowering blood pressure, natural ways of thinning the blood. And by the way, almost all vegans have naturally thin blood. And that means there's greater opportunity for blood to flow through the arteries and veins and system and organs without coagulating or aggregating with your red blood cells and creating clots. This is from Northwestern University. Men who take once daily aspirin have nearly double the risk of melanoma compared to men who are not exposed to daily aspirin. Wow. Double your risk of a deadly cancer, one of the worst cancers, if you take an aspirin. So all these decades, men have been taking aspirin, didn't know that they had a greater risk of a stroke or heart attack and bleeding, dying from bleeding, and being nutrient deficient because the aspirin wiped those out. And that's gone on for 50 years. How many people suffer because of that ignorance and that hubris? This was done at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. So, greater patient education from a more independent perspective can make a difference. And finally, from Huizong University of Science and Technology, dietary polyphenols, that's your grapes and blueberries and raspberries and strawberries and mulberries, the more that you have, the lower your risk of hypertension. How long was the study? 18-year nationwide cohort study. So you increase your polyphenol intake, you lower your blood pressure. All right? This is a large-scale, long-term population study. And this was part of the China Health and Nutrition Survey. And they looked at 91,561 person years of follow-up with 3,866 participants. And they reduced the risk of hypertension, according to this, about 95%. Wow. One last little thing here. And this is from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, and Harvard Medical School. A new study finds people are more creative after waking from the earliest stages of sleep. So if you're still feeling stuck on a problem that seems unsolvable, you may come up with a creative solution after a short nap, very short, according to a new study at MIT and Harvard. So the phase when you're drifting between sleep and waking, a state known as sleep onset, the creative mind is particularly fertile, the research showed. They also demonstrated for the first time that when people are prompted to dream about a particular topic during that sleep phase, they perform much more creatively when asked to perform three creative tasks around a topic. So, my suggestion is this, and I'm sure some of you already have done this, is to make a note before you go to bed, the things you want to address. And then the first time you wake up in the morning, put that in your mind. If you go for a walk, you actually increase the creativity. Every morning, I go for a walk and or run or bike or all three, and I'm thinking, I'm writing in my brain. I'm writing a speech. I'm writing an essay. I'm laying out the next documentary. In fact, I did all that just this morning. So that's the latest on health and healing. Hopefully you can find information within that to benefit you. We're going to take a break and come right back. I have a lot of little points I'm going to make from the news on a lot of different topics, from artificial intelligence and what's going on there. And corporate debt, the newest study on that. Wow, who knew? Really, $25 trillion corporations owe? Ooh, and these are the titans, Boeing and a lot of other companies, the blue chips. Who knew they had that much debt? What happens when sales are stagnant? What happens when inventories are overflowing? What happens when there's shortages? None of that is good. So I'm going to deal with all this. And then I'm going to ask you, please call in. As yesterday, Jeremiah did and made some very interesting comments. And I'm going to go a little further on what Jeremiah, if you're listening, please, in our talkback segment, which will follow about 15 minutes from now, call in because I want to add on to what you started in that conversation, because I was thinking about this later in the day. 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. It's our talkback number. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. See, bankrolled the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists to sum of $11 million to promote COVID vaccines as, quote, safe and effective for pregnant women, according to an investigation published this week by attorney Maggie Thorpe. All right. So, and think of how much money the pediatricians have received through their institution from vaccine makers and drug pharmaceutical makers. They're also on board. And the AMA, they're also on board. So we found this out through Mrs. Thorpe's Freedom of Information Act request, and they revealed all that. Quote, multiple cooperative agreements to carry out work largely designed and controlled by the CDC and contingent upon these other organizations to receive the monies, adherence to the CDC's policies of COVID infection and control. Well, the American Academy of Obstetricians and Gynecologists is the premier professional membership group, 60,000 members in America, and they're getting all this money. Now, why is this important? Because for the last 15 or so years, the most vocal, prominent, and respected feminist in America, she's actually been in that movement for 35 years, but there were a lot of other prominent women who were leaders in that movement when she began. Betty Friedan, Gloria Steinem, dozens. But they've all either died or retired. So she's the spokesperson on women's health issues. And she received a huge batch of hundreds of thousands of documents from the original safety studies of the vaccine maker, Pfizer. Remember the time we were told the vaccine is 95% effective and 100% safe? Well, it wasn't. Those were all lies. Instead, we're seeing that they knew that myocarditis would be a common occurrence. They knew that pregnant women had a really huge increase in miscarriage and stillbirth. They knew that women's menses, or periods, were going to be adversely affected. None of this was reported. None of it was shared. That's malice aforethought. If this were a trial, they'd be found in contempt of subordinating justice. They would be hiding evidence, and that's a criminal offense. So she took a look at this, found that it was rather overwhelming, and so she asked for volunteers, 2,500 scientists, many epidemiologists who specialize in looking at data and can understand it. Then they went by specialization. A person came into her office and volunteered who had background in research methodology. Then another 1,000 worldwide. So 3,500 clinician scientists, fact checkers. They started getting groups of material and then analyzing them, highlighting them. Mind you, they're only working with the manufacturer's data. This is not subjective. It's their data. And what they found was appalling, what they considered crimes against humanity. So the manufacturer knew, according to this data, the CDC knew, the FDA knew, that meant the White House top officials knew, that meant that Anthony Fauci and everyone else at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, and that means Collins at the U.S. Public Health Service knew, everybody knew that this was not safe and effective. It was not an occasional hot lot. And that's what they've been sharing. And there's still hundreds of thousands more documents coming. So she went public with it. And she appeared on some programs, and none in the liberal media, because the moment she started to talk, the place where she had called home for decades, 35 years, closed her out and then started to attack her. She had never been attacked by the mainstream corporate media, the liberal establishment, and the women's health rights groups. They all ganged up on her. Her contracts were adversely affected. Her income was adversely affected. And so she went forward. And she has just simply said to the women's movement, "You're pathetic. You sold out. Where were you to protect women? Pregnant women. Women whose periods, hormone levels were adversely affected. Women whose cancers were in remission and now coming back with a bang." And this is being seen all over the world, by the way. New and aggressive cancers, and people were cancer-free after the vaccines. So she is adamant. Now, mind you, she ran the whole movement, and she's now completely washed her hands of the entire feminist movement. Rightly or wrongly, that's her words, her feelings, and that's what she went on the record on my show saying. But what does it say when the women who chose for legitimate reasons, maybe they had autoimmune conditions, maybe they had cancer and couldn't get the vaccine, maybe they had already been infected, have natural immunity, and the scientific literature showed natural immunity worked better than any vaccine. Right now, natural immunity is at 16 years and counting, far superior than any vaccine ever created. Well, as long as you don't know all that, then you only have one opinion, the official opinion. Everything else is considered disinformation. Make sure that you don't get that correct information. Hundreds of groups have been established, all from big pharma and corporate interest, to decide what is correct or incorrect misinformation and information. Now, of course, everything they're giving you is misinformation, disinformation, lies. Everything that is the truth is being called disinformation, and you're not allowed to see it. Censorship. Since when did the left consider censorship a good idea? But now it embraces it. It embraces wokeism, identity politics, racism. Wow, how far down the rabbit hole can that take you? So this is what it's showing. Now we have one more door that was open, showing that all these respected institutions and their hundreds of thousands of members, they were working based upon being paid to do so. And when was the last time you saw an OBGYN or pediatrician in demonstrations against a person's freedom of choice, a woman's right to her body? Wasn't that the whole basis that all of us supported? My body, my right? Absolutely. Well, now it's not your body, and it's not your right. They control your body, and they control the right. And that's just in one area. By the way, today, I'm going to commend those in this audience who went up to Albany to protest against some of the things that are happening up there that you should be aware of, because it's really serious. There's a call to action in Albany today. It's too late to get up there today. But there's another thing happening you should be aware of also. It's Senate Bill 5632, 5632. And that bill will allow you to keep or get returned an analog meter. You do not want a smart meter. They are dangerous. They should never have been allowed. 5G is dangerous. They're taking you to 5G. Why? Because they want you to have better reception? No, because it connects, 5G connects to all the smart meters. It connects to all the internets. It makes it possible that anything you do that's electronic, they can monitor, watch, listen to, and track. So they lied about their intent, and now you have it, and there's all these 10,000 peer-reviewed journal articles on the dangers of 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5G, and now they're going towards 6G and higher. Okay, so contact your legislator and said you want a return of an analog meter. Take those dangerous, very radiating meters, the smart meters, out of your house. Don't buy any smart equipment in your house. If you buy a computer, take your finger very gently across the top. And once you see a little hole or feel a little hole, you won't see it because the frame is black. They're watching you. They're watching you and listening to you. tape it up. Okay? Just give me that. So, and right now the governor wants to put internment camps all over New York and forcibly vaccinate everyone in the state because they feel that you may represent a public health threat, if not by COVID, some manufactured new so-called pandemic that is in the works. And they'll get away with it because politics can be bought, and they bought New York. New York is just one of the most corrupt places on earth. Wow. Just giving you a heads up on this. All right. Now, for those of you using Botox, I won't imagine most of the people in this audience use Botox. You're smarter than that. In Hollywood, everyone uses Botox because it's the thing to do, but there's mindless idiots, in my opinion. Most, not all. Here's the latest. And we want to thank Sarah G over Green Med Info for this. There's an ugly side to Botox. I started talking about Botox years ago because I said what it is, it's paralyzing your muscles. That means it's putting a toxin in your body. That means 24/7 your whole immune system has to rush up there and through phagocytosis and other means detoxify from the Botox you put in the skin. Well, that takes away the immune system from other places in the body. Therefore, it could adversely affect your immune system. Here's the latest on Botox. It doesn't only deaden facial nerves and muscles, but it can also now alter human cognition, your emotions, and empathy as well. So it's FDA approved, only temporary, make moderate to severe frown lines, crow's feet, and forehead lines look better in adults. Problems swallowing, quote, this is from the actual, manufacturer. Problems swallowing, speaking, or breathing due to weakening of associated muscles can be severe and result in loss of life. You can die from this. You're at the highest risk if those problems are pre-existing before injection. Swallowing problems may last for several months. Spread of toxin effects. The effect of botulism toxin may affect areas away from the injection site and cause serious symptoms such as loss of strength, overall muscle weakness, double vision, blurred vision, drooping eyelids, hoarseness or change or loss of voice, trouble saying words clearly, loss of bladder control, trouble breathing, and trouble swallowing. Well, that's an awful lot of exceptionally high adverse effects to pay to look a little bit younger but have no emotion on your face because you look like a balloon that's blown up and someone painted a face on it. And it doesn't help that the situation gets worse because almost all your mainstream tabloids, like Time magazine, uncritically laud its benefits. This quote in this last January 1917 article, how Botox became a drug that could treat everything. That's not true. They said it could treat over 800 conditions. That's not true. All right? And so suddenly everybody wanted it. But there's a lot of toxic reactions, including death. And proponents of Botox claim that amounts of botulism toxin administered is far too low to cause safety concerns. Not true. Why? In fact, it only takes 75 billionth of a gram to kill a person weighing 75 kilograms or almost 65 pounds. It has been estimated that only 1 kilogram, that's 2.2 pounds, would be enough to kill the entire human population. So once again, you're believing the people who are propagandists, and everything you get all the time, 24/7, is propaganda. And what if you begin to believe it after time because all these respected liberal sites and conservative sites and all these people in the media tell you, well, believe us, and you do. You don't do your own homework. Do your own homework, okay? I don't want to see people dying because they thought it would be better to don't do Botox. Oh, and here we have another really important feminist, Chelsea Clinton. And Chelsea's doing the right thing. Good for you, Chelsea. Go for it. She now is in partnership with the World Health Organization, the Gates Foundation, quote, on the largest childhood immunization effort ever. Quote, it's called the Big Catch-Up. Initiative, described by the World Health Organization as, quote, targeted global effort to boost vaccination among children following declines driven by COVID pandemic in the last 18 months. All right. For all of you in this audience, including the physicians and nurses, the pharmacist, go to GaryNoll.com, go to articles, and open up the articles on vaccination. I believe there's around 65 to 70 articles there. All are scholarly. All of them have actual footnotes, complete footnotes. It's not my opinion. Not a single vaccine can you show me ever created in history can be both safe and effective. And everything we know about vaccines has been a lie. Don't take my word for it. Go and read the articles. Maybe Chelsea Clinton, before she aligns with Bill Gates, oh, I forgot, Bill Gates is a friend of her father, and they're both friends of Epstein. There's a good friend to have, right? No, I don't think so. And the World Health Organization, they're not a criminal organization, are they? Yeah, they are. So you might want to, before you put vaccines in all these people, including the COVID vaccine in children, making it mandated, you might want to look at the actual peer-reviewed independent science that shows that children, infants, toddlers who get your vaccines are not dying from COVID, but they have died from the vaccines. But that doesn't seem to matter to most people. Just want to share that because you wouldn't know that's happening. But it is. And also, one more thing here. I want to be able to have people come to the rally. Today there's a rally, but not this rally. It's too late to get there. It's the Teachers for Choice rally. Go to the website teachersforchoice.org and show to stop the vote time for a medical freedom rally, meaning you want your freedom of choice. Time for medical freedom. All right, that's what the rally is. And support them in their efforts. Go to teachersforchoice.org and support Time for Medical Freedom. Okay, they're up in Albany today. Good for them. I wish them the best. And here's just something to think about. Richard Gale, our scholar in residence, and myself, took about 6 months, and we went to every official site we could find to find out how much debt do we actually have. And what we found is that you have to pull all the numbers together. You have to aggregate them, because otherwise they'll just say, well, we owe $31.4 billion and we have 3.3% unemployment, and aren't things great? Well, how much income do you have from all the taxes every year? Well, that's about 4-point-something trillion. But you're spending that. You're spending a lot more than that. So you're going to print more money. That's going to cause inflation. That's how you get inflation. And then everything goes up. And then your interest rates, instead of being 1%, and if so a person could buy a house, now they're 5 to 6%. So if you can't buy something or can't pay investigation, Forbes magazine investigation, quote, inside the $2.5 trillion debt binge that has taken S&P 500 titans, including Boeing and AT&T, from blue chips to near junk. All right, and then I read the article. Wow. And then it talks about the boom. Before the pandemic, the Fed encouraged S&P titans to binge on trillions of dollars in debt, buy up your competition, buy up your own stock. So even though your company may not seem profitable, when you buy up your treasury stock, meaning you're buying your own stock back. So if you bought 200 million shares of your stock, then that means the value of the stock you have remaining goes up. All right? Supply and demand. And that means you get your bonuses based upon, well, we didn't actually make more sales, but we brought more of our stock back in, and so the value of the stock we have increased, so I want my bonus. And that's how it works. So how much do they owe now? $25 billion. Yeah. No one knew this. This was not a figure anyone had at hand. We didn't know. We came up with $5 billion. Quote, over the next 6 years, Parker borrowed heavily, tapping capital markets no fewer than 18 times to raise $25 billion in debt. Now, I mean, $25 trillion is what they owe. But this just shows you how all of these different people are borrowing money, huge amounts, and they're giving it. Now they owe $25 trillion. What happens when inflation goes up and everything costs more, but the value of the dollar goes down? So you've got $25 trillion that you owe, but you don't have $25 trillion in current currency you can get your hands on. So all those companies, all of them, could go broke. All right? So that's what it means to be irresponsible at every level of our corporate industries. $25 trillion. Wow. Okay. You can call in now and share your points of view. And until you do, I want to play a clip. I'm going to play a clip each day from something that just ended that not a single article, not a single broadcast, not a single mention, it was totally censored. Some of the world's most noted and respected scientists, the top orthodox pro-vaccine scientists, together have published thousands of papers in peer-reviewed journals. They've counseled governments, World Health Organization, CDC, but they're all under attack. Why? Because once they took a look over time at everything about COVID, they saw that everything was wrong. Everything was wrong. And they began to speak out about it because these are, you know, these are decent human beings who are not going to be influenced by you telling them to shut up, don't talk, be a part of the consensus. They're not a part of the consensus. Finally, the European Union invited them to come in and have a one-day summit on COVID, special committee. I have downloaded this to play on next Tuesday night's Progressive Commentary. I've got one tonight I can't cancel, so it's going to be a humdinger. And then the following week. But yesterday you heard from one person about how this was all planned. You can agree or disagree with him, but he's got documentation. You don't. You only have the word of liars, pathological liars. He's not one. Today you hear Dr. Cole. This is what he has to say about what has gone on. And he's one of America's leading and most respected pathologists. Here's his discussion.
While my slides are coming up, I'm not used to seeing my face like that. So, I mean, you know, I look pretty serious and engaged. It's interesting. I had a colleague say, you know, it's weird. Usually you go to big gatherings to see rock stars, and now it's to see doc stars. So I want to thank the members of Parliament for having us here. I want to thank the organizers. I want to thank my colleagues who've been brave enough to stand up for the truth around the world. In spite of the slings and the arrows, our attacks on our licenses, attacks on free speech. I want to thank all of you for the efforts that you've all put into telling the truth at all costs. And we, you know, are in the middle of something that's not really about a virus, it's about free speech. And still we see much of the world worried about the virus and living in fear as we're 3 years into 2 weeks of flattening the curve. So, you know, as we sit here now, there are countries passing laws that are preventing people from speaking science, speaking the truth, preventing the opportunity to engage in dialogue. We've seen the loss and the death of informed consent around the world. How many people were told of all the harms to the brain, to the heart, to the reproductive organs prior to getting these injections? I would posit that none have. And I think that's the problem with which we're faced. And, you know, if a therapy is effective, it doesn't matter if it isn't safe. And obviously, we can hound the world with all the data in the world, but if people don't listen, it doesn't matter. Are my slides up? Or are they still loading, Robbie? Okay. They're coming. Okay. I know a lot of people have injection regret. They were hoping not to get this, but because they wanted to travel or because they were coerced into thinking that these investigational biological products were actually a vaccine. And as you can see from all the data we've received today, they most certainly weren't. We've seen the death of public health. Vitamin D was ignored. We have a vitamin D deficiency pandemic around the world that could have allayed and prevented much of the harms that we did see. We have an obesity pandemic around the world. We have sick care systems around the world, not healthcare systems. And probably the biggest death we've seen around the world in the last 3 years is the death of curiosity and the death of critical thinking. And the laws around the world are irrelevant if there's no will to enforce the laws and the regulations that are on the books. So we've also seen much corruption happen all over a little virus that was no worse than a flu. I'm going to start by showing you an excessive list of studies showing the mutagenicity of these shots. Oh, wait a minute, I'm not, because there isn't an excessive list of the carcinogenicity and the mutagenicity studies. I'll show you all the ones from Pfizer right now. Oh, no, I won't. Wait, I'll show you the long list of ones from Okay, I'll show you the mutagenic carcinogenic studies from AstraZeneca and J&J. No, I won't, because the studies weren't done. They don't exist. I always start my talk like this. The man who does not read has no advantage over the man who cannot read. And it seems that much of the medical profession and much of politics around the world is suffering this problem of illiteracy. And of course, all scientists and doctors agree when you censor the ones who don't. Now, how many people in this room know about the Trusted News Initiative? Please raise your hand. Okay, that's about half the room. That's more than most audiences. The reason you haven't heard most of the things that you've heard today is because the media is in collusion with whatever the powers that be in preventing you from getting that information. All right, next question then. Let's talk about the monster in the room, spike protein and cancer mechanism potentials. How many people in this room, after the rollout of the injections, have a friend, a colleague, a patient who had an unexpected cancer or very aggressive cancer? Please show of hands. Wow. Let the record show for those who can't see the room that that's more than half of the room. So who's the pathologist? The pathologist is the most important doctor that you never meet that you always hope is right. And I'm honored to be here with my esteemed colleagues. We're the quality control of medicine. We're the ones, if we see something, we say something, whether it's convenient or not. And why does it matter? Because it's your life and death between our eyeballs. It's what we do every day. All good science begins with observation. My colleagues here, and I want to thank Dr. Burkhardt and his group because they were the first to really start pointing out these vaccinal harms and the deaths due to this spike protein. Thank you, Dr. Burkhardt. I was at a meeting in Texas just 2 days ago, and more pathologists were there. I was at another meeting recently. Pathologists are seeing this. Some of them are still afraid to say something because of loss of profession or job. Clinical observation, the cancer rates are off the charts and growing, and it's really unfortunate. Insurance data sets out of Germany show a marked increase in unexpected cancers as well. Colleague Dr. DeGlisch, oncologist in the UK, met with him a couple months ago. He's seeing astounding numbers of very aggressive cancers in his population. Now, this is somebody who's been doing oncology for 40 years. So when you see something, you say something. He has spoken out. It's time to stop these shots. Here's work from the Ethical Skeptic, some very good data crunching. I'm going to show you four graphs. And all four of these show the increasing trends over expected averages in cancers applied from data from the CDC. Here we have another graph. See, in 2021, something interesting happened. And here you have the upward trend. And these are reported carcinomas over expected in trends. Here we see the same thing. See that line going upwards since 2021. What happened in mid-2021? Oh, I don't know. Maybe mandates of an experimental biological product injected into billions of people around the world. Well, let's look at one more. Oh, my gosh. Same thing. That is not anecdote, my friends. That is not anecdote. One cannot find that for which they do not look. The cells don't lie. As you saw from my colleagues, the spike protein is present throughout all tissues of the body. That is not meant to be. Human cells are meant to make human proteins, not to make toxins. So to inject a gene-based product into the body and make your cells the factory for a toxin is psychologically insane. What we need to demand is the ICD-10, the diagnostic codes in all databases in every country in the EU, in the United States, in all countries of the world, those should be updated weekly. These numbers are available, and yet we have a lag in reporting of easily accessible data. Every doctor that sees a patient puts a code after a visit. Every pathologist that sees a slide puts a code after a diagnosis. These data are available in the data sets of every country that uses the international data codes. Easy as that. All this data should be transparent and available. It should not be hidden. So really quickly, I'll go back one there. Sorry, lost my flow. All right, cancer mechanisms, gene mutations, can the spike protein do that? You bet it can. Hypoxic environment from clotting, you bet it can. Reactivation of latent viruses, does spike protein do that? You bet it can. Low interferon, interferon is critical in fighting off cancer. Does spike protein do that? You bet it does. Decrease in cell mitochondrial energy because of destruction of mitochondria, studies out of the Salk Institute, you bet the spike protein does that. Loss of immune surveillance and suppression of your immune system, you bet it does that. Fragmented microRNAs from impure vials, you bet. Hormonal dysregulation, you bet. Toll-like receptor alterations that are necessary for keeping cancer in check, does the spike protein do that? You bet it does. Is there an SV40 cancer virus promoter region within the Pfizer vials? Yes, there is. All of these are mechanisms the spike protein can cause. So why would we inject people with something that makes a spike protein that can do all these things that can lead to cancer mechanisms? Good question. Now, does the spike protein go away quickly? No. Does the mRNA go away quickly? No. This study by Dr. Roltgen out of Stanford showed that the body produces, Spanish. I didn't mean to hacer la presentación en español. The body hangs on to the synthetic mRNA for at least 60 days and makes spike during that whole period of time. Not in everybody, but in this study, for at least 60 days, the body still had mRNA and was still making spike protein that does all those mechanisms that I just showed you. Does the spike protein bind to the P53 family of genes? Yes, it does. The P53 is the guardian of your genome. And if that becomes dysregulated, guess what can happen? Cancer pathways ensue. It also binds to the BRCA gene, which is responsible for breast and ovarian cancer. And that's the guardian of your genome. And if that goes awry, all cancer pathways can open up.
In just a few seconds, WBAI, our sister station, where I've been for 47 years, will take a break and go to the news. We're going to continue up to the top of the hour, and we'll be taking your calls. This is Dr. Ryan Cole that you're listening to, one of America's most respected pathologists. And because he told the truth about what he was finding when he examined people post-mortem after they died for who had the vaccine, he was finding spike proteins all over the body. Remember, we tried to give you a heads up. We tried to warn you, but the power of those individuals running this whole morbid process, they superseded the truth, unfortunately. Back to Dr. Cole.
BRCA gene, which is responsible for breast and ovarian cancer. And that's the guardian of your genome. And if that goes awry, all cancer pathways can open up. This I borrowed from my colleague, Dr. Burkhardt, with his permission. This is all those blue cells are a lymphoma of the stomach. And what's fascinating is all the brown dots here, that is spike protein in every one of those cancer cells. These are studies that should have been done before one needle went in one human arm anywhere in the world. None of these were done. This is one from my laboratory. This is a pancreatic adenocarcinoma. See all the pink dots that should not be there? That is spike protein in each one of those cancer cells. Did we stain like Dr. Burkhardt did to make sure it wasn't virus that was making the spike protein? We ruled out the other proteins from the virus? Yes, we did. This is post-vaccinal. And this patient who thought she was doing the right thing because her doctor, without giving her informed consent, talked her into receiving a shot, and now she only has a few months to live for a virus for which she was at very little to no risk. What about the vials? Well, the European Medicine Agency in documents showed that the purity of the mRNA was only 50%. What does that mean? There is a lot of microRNA in these vials that isn't coding for spike protein may not code at all, but may code for other proteins. Same thing in Australia. The vials weren't pure. So instead, what did the agency did? They just dropped the standard and said, okay, 50% is okay now. That's not what we do with medical drugs or therapeutic products at all. And here we have from Comirnaty cell studies that these cell cultures are making a protein that's supposed to weigh 141 kilodaltons. That's what the spike weighs. Yet they're making something that weighs 190 and 100. They're making other proteins other than the spike protein. Are these carcinogenic? Maybe. And we know microRNAs, these fragmented RNAs, are known carcinogens. Known carcinogens. So impure RNA in the vial can be carcinogenic. Bone marrow, here's one from my laboratory. Every little pink dot that you see there, in the bone marrow, that's spike protein, damaging stem cell lines in the bone marrow. Another reason we are seeing a marked increase in lymphomas and leukemias. So wiping out macrophage lines, natural killer cell lines, T cell lines, suppressing normal function of the immune system. And then this paper was retracted. It shows that the DNA is damaged by the spike protein.
4 minutes left.
That it gets into the nucleus and destroys immune cell function. This is important as well, because that DNA damage mismatch repair can happen in most tissues in the body. This was retracted because at the NIH, there were characters who decided they didn't want this information to be public. So a FOIA request requesting all communications between two characters, I'm not going to go through the long story, pushed to get that paper retracted, because this cancer-promoting mechanism is inconvenient to the truth. And all 490 pages concerning the retraction of these papers will not be released by the government. They're holding them because there's a story being hidden behind the companies and the NIH knowing that there was carcinogenic potential in these products.
I got 30 seconds, Gary.
What about the nanoparticles? Well, on the nanoparticles from Pfizer, from Moderna, from AstraZeneca, there's a warning. This product is not for human or veterinary use. These lipid nanoparticles on the chemical manufacturer safety data sheets clearly state these nanoparticles are not for human veterinary use. Yet 5 billion people have them in their bodies now.
And it goes on. So you see, now you know why the scientific and medical establishment and the media would not cover one of the most important summits in world history, the European Union. And by the way, watching it, you saw all of the presenters given standing ovations by the Congress. So that cat is out of the bag worldwide. More coming up. Thank you all for listening and sharing. And tonight, 7 o'clock, another powerful progressive commentary hour. Have a nice day. Stay tuned for your Tree Lead.